All right, everybody. Welcome back. Thanks for being here. You almost clicked on that true crime podcast. You almost got on Instagram, but you're here instead. We thank you. Right, Susan?
We do.
So we've been talking about Nauvoo, and we're still going to talk about Nauvoo. What are we going to talk about today, Susan?
Our topic today is going to be the Nauvoo Temple during the time of Joseph Smith, Brigham Young, and we'll jump all the way to President Hinckley and talk about the Nauvoo Temple being rebuilt.
Excellent. Well, I will kick us off with a little rendition of If You Could Hie to Kolob. If you could hie to Kolob in the twinkling of an eye, and then continue onward with that same speed to fly, do you think that you could ever in all eternity find out the where gods began to be?
Oh, I like
all right. There you go. Just gonna maybe do two verses, but I'll do another one at the end or
perfect.
Two. All right, Susan. Well, I don't have a whole lot to say, so, and people are probably going, hurrah. He talks too much anyway.
No
so,
way.
All right, well, turn it over to you, please.
All right, our topic today is going to be the Nauvoo Temple. I love the Nauvoo Temple. I've served as a missionary there in the temple, and we're going to learn about it past, present, perhaps even future. We know that the concept of temples, Joseph first introduced, and was supposed to be in Independence, Missouri. And Joseph said at the time he's there and 1831, that the spot for the temple is lying westward. You can see as you look at the various maps, especially the one where you see the three dark rectangles in the middle. Joseph had planned that there would be 24 temples there in Independence. To date, none of those temples have been built. The next we learned about that there was a Kirtland Temple. And the Lord had revealed to the prophet Joseph that he was to establish a house, even a house of prayer, a house of fasting, a house of faith, a house of learning, a house of glory, a house of order, and a house of God. And that was the Kirtland Temple. And we know that in the Kirtland Temple on April 3rd of 1836, that Joseph, with Oliver Cowdery, saw the Savior Jesus Christ, and also received temple keys from Moses, the key of gathering, Elias, the covenant of Abraham, and Elijah, then to turn the hearts of the children to their fathers and vice versa. From the Kirtland Temple, we moved to the Far West Temple site. And notice this was another temple to be built. The Lord said in Doctrine and Covenants, section 115, verse 8, I command you to build a house unto me, for the gathering together of my saints, that they may worship me. Well, we know that of the Far West Temple site, that it's still a site today, that the temple has not been rebuilt. We know that, as we talked about just a few times ago, that the Quorum of the Twelve came to the Far West Temple site and put in the last of the cornerstones. So there's your Far West Temple site. There was some talk that a temple site had also been designated at a place called Adam on Diamond. But at this point, it seems to be more speculative than concrete. As the saints now fled from Missouri, they fled to Illinois, to Quincy, and then eventually up to a town that was called Commerce. Pretty swampy, remember that? We remember also that the saints, once there in Commerce, there was a lot of sick and dying. And with the sick and dying, we know that Joseph Smith had a great day of healing then in July of 1839. And people were blessed on both banks of the Mississippi River. But with all the sick and dying, that Joseph then would hold funerals in Nauvoo. We learned that at those funerals, which were typically held on Mondays and Thursdays, Thursday being the traditional day when Moses went up to Mount Sinai to speak with God, and Monday's a traditional day, he comes down with the Ten Commandments. We know that at those funerals and in those graveyards, that Joseph will introduce much of what we today call temple work. It will be at a funeral that we learned if the dead rise not at all, as Joseph's now speaking to the mourners, why are they then baptized for the dead, as he quotes from Corinthians? From that point on, you get various ordinances that we now perform in the temples. By this point, we now pick up today where Joseph Smith in Doctrine and Covenants 124 is told by the Lord that it's time to build another house in my name. In other words, another house like Kirtland, but in so many ways it would be different. So it's time to build a house in my name for the Most High to dwell therein. For there is not a place found on earth that he may come to restore again that which was lost unto you, or which he hath taken away, even the fullness of the priesthood. So with that, Joseph's now ready with the Latter-day Saints to build another temple. And that's our big topic today. The question is, where will he build it? And for this, we turn to this man, whose name is Daniel H. Wells. Daniel H. Wells had been a longtime resident in Commerce. At that time, he was not a member of the church. He was a justice of the peace, a judge, and Daniel H. Wells literally donated to the prophet Joseph Smith 4 acres on which the Nauvoo Temple would stand. Eventually, Daniel H. Wells will join the church and will be in the first presidency when Brigham Young is the president of the church. But what we learn today is that not a member of the church, he makes a contribution. His contribution is huge. And it's literally a city block, 4 acres at that time in Nauvoo, to the building of the temple. Now, from Daniel H. Wells, we move to William Weeks. William Weeks, we don't have a picture of this man. William Weeks was an architect by trade. And William Weeks, his house still stands in Nauvoo, and you can go there and see some of the architectural drawings that he did. But William Weeks, of all the architects, and even Truman O. Angel was in Nauvoo. And we know that Truman O. Angel was the architect of the Salt Lake Temple. But it will be William Weeks that Joseph will choose to be the architect of the temple. Now, William Weeks now begins to draw his plans. And these plans, so interesting. Probably the most interesting part you see is the angel that's horizontal like a weather vane. But Joseph Smith will, in many respects, be the architect of the temple because he will say to Weeks, I want you to build it after the pattern that Joseph has seen. And most unusual, where you get the moonstones and the star stones. And anyway, just gorgeous. Most unusual building there in Nauvoo. Well, we know that even before all the architectural plans were drawn up, Joseph is ready to lay cornerstones and let's start once again to build a temple. Not like Far West, where the cornerstones were put in the ground and nothing moved forward. But on April 6, notice it's the 11th year anniversary of the church, that Joseph will then see that cornerstones are laid in the ground for what will become the Nauvoo Temple. What's so interesting about this cornerstone laying is that before they were laid in the ground, there was a military procession and literally a parade, and it will be the Nauvoo Legion leading the way up from the flats to what they call the bluffs in Nauvoo, where the temple will be built. And then the cornerstones will be dedicated. Well, as the temple begins to move forward, we know that Joseph Smith will first see that the temple baptismal font is right up there on Temple Square, where men will be building all around it. And this beautiful font is on the backs then of 12 oxen, the 12 oxen to represent the 12 tribes of Israel. What is so unusual, and I know we've talked about this before, is that covering the baptismal font from inclement weather, they literally built a pitched roof house over the font. So it's the most unusual construction. You get the men out there building the Nauvoo Temple, but at the same time, you've got men working on the walls and the foundation and whatever they're assigned to do. You have the lineup of people getting ready to get into the house so they could be baptized for their kindred dead and loved ones. Well, where were the men then working? There were four quarries in Nauvoo. This is showing the quarry still there, but not functioning as a quarry, on Main and Broadway streets. And men would then go into the quarry. What they're quarrying is limestone. Limestone is so much easier to work with than granite. I don't know any woman that wants a limestone counter, but granite counters, they would go for it. But they're working with stone that would be soft enough for the saints with the tools that they have to carve into it. So the men now begin to work at the quarry, and Joseph begins to see the walls now going forth. At this point, he will turn to this woman, and her name is Mary Elizabeth Leitner. She is one of many, many seamstresses in Nauvoo. And I always think it's so interesting that it's her. You may recall that she and her sister Caroline, Mary Elizabeth Rollins Leitner, are the ones that went in and saved the pages of the Book of Commandments when W.W. Phelps' store in Independence, the press is destroyed, and these young girls go and they hide in the corn patch. So she has a real feeling for scriptures, and Joseph will go to this woman and ask her to make the first temple clothing. So what are we talking about? We're talking about today, you might call it the priesthood packet or the garments. And it will take her about 6 weeks under the direction of Joseph Smith to sew the temple clothes as they were at that time. When Mary has finished her work, we now arrive in May of 1842. Now, May 4th of 1842 becomes a very significant date. And why it is so significant is that this is the first time in this dispensation that the endowment, meaning a gift from God, will be given. And notice where it's given. It's not given in the Nauvoo Temple first. Those walls are still rising up, and there's still that pitched roofed house, baptismal font, that's all going forward. So the first endowment will be given on Water Street in Joseph Smith's little red brick store. Now, notice on the bottom of the store, that's where you go in and shop. You're going to buy things, you'd buy it there. The top of the floor, that's sacred space. That's where the first endowments were given. That's where articles of faith are written. That's where sealings of couples occur. That's where the Relief Society is organized. So in many respects, a red brick store, second floor, is like the church office building. Now, this then shows an outline of what the store was like. So notice downstairs, you've got your merchandise, right? And where the endowment will be given, it's not in the storeroom or, say, Joseph Smith's office, but it's always given in what's called the assembly room. And you'd say, who receives then the first endowment on that May 4th, 1842? And the answer is 9 men. Notice no women received the endowment on that date. And here's showing 4 of them. And notice you've got Joseph Hiram, right? Newell K. Whitney, the bishop, and Brigham Young, president of the 12. They were among the 9 that received the endowments. Now, we can name about 80 or so people that received the endowments from Joseph Smith before the martyrdom, before the temple was ever completed. And what I find so interesting is the ones that received their endowments formed a quorum. Now, today, we think of quorums like a deacon's quorum, a teacher's quorum, elder's quorum, you know, priest's quorum. But they formed a quorum that was called the Quorum of the Anointed. And this is the only quorum that I know in the history of the church where you've got men and women in that quorum. And what did they have in common? And the answer is they had received their endowments. Now, many in this quorum, when the temple is completed, they will be what we would today call temple workers. And so there was this quorum, and then the quorum would meet, but then Joseph Smith died. And at the time of his martyrdom, June 27th, 1844, you'd say, well, how are they doing with the building of the temple? And by this point, the temple is about a story and a half high. It was about 18 feet high. There were walls, but no floors. And it's like the shell of the building's going up. And so you'd look, and after Joseph's death, the question was, what now? And everyone will turn then to Brigham Young, who stood 5'10", red hair and freckles. He's the president of the Quorum of the 12. And the question was, what was he going to do? I mean, would the church die? Would it go forward? And he had several plans, which at some point perhaps Clayton will get to talk about. But, you know, he was going to change the name of Nauvoo to City of Joseph. He was going to make sure that Nauvoo Temple was built. He said, if we have to build it, you know, like the Jews with a trowel in one hand and a sword in the other, you know, he was going to see that temple was finished. And then he said he was going to take the people west, but he didn't want to do so until all the people that wanted to had received their endowment. And so you see a man with a mission. You know, he's got the town, he's going to finish the temple no matter what. And you eventually get guards will be protecting the workers. You get little fire pits going on so they can work around the clock on the temple, even at night. And then endowments will be given for the living. Now, notice if you're talking endowments for the dead, much what we do in temples today for our loved ones to have the same joy that's been ours. It was in the Nauvoo Temple, you're looking endowments for the living. Now, the man.
So did they do any for the dead in the Nauvoo Temple, do you know?
You can't find it. You do find on occasion on the ceilings a woman standing in as proxy for, say, a deceased wife. But that's very, very rare. That the Nauvoo Temple, when you think of it, it's for the living except for, you know, the baptismal font, right? Mm-hmm. So endowments, it was different in many respects. But what I find so interesting is that Brigham Young will turn over the endowments to his brother, Joseph Young. Joseph Young at that time was a senior president of the 70s. And Joseph Young, I see him as very, very organized. And so when they came through the temple, they came through in companies. Like for many of us today, you know, I say, hey, am I going to go to the temple? Is my husband coming with me? His family, you know, that kind of thing. But you went in quorums. So you'd say the first day the temple is open, obviously it's a who's who of early church history. You know, it's the Quorum of the 12, the presiding bishop, you know, the seven presidents of the 70s. But then they will start and say Quorum 1 of the 70s with their wives and, you know, extended family. They're old enough. And then the next day, Quorum 2, and the next day. And at that point in Nauvoo, there were 35 quorums of the 70s. More men were 70s than were elders or high priests. And so as you look at the companies as they went as their quorum, I think today we still call it company, but they were really where you'd say they'd serve missions together. They, you know, it was kind of their social group in addition in Nauvoo. Well, the question is, how many endowments then for the living were done in Nauvoo before it's time to go? That temple, notice the huge effort from the time of the cornerstones, 1841. The temple where the endowments will be given will be on the third floor because the other floors aren't finished. So although that you're looking at a finished temple, at the time it wasn't finished. And notice how long it's open, December 10th to February 3rd, and then we'll extend really a couple of days after. But basically, that's your time of the endowment. And during that time, over 5,500 Latter-day Saints received their endowment. And with that, Brigham Young is ready to go west. Remember, he doesn't want to go west until he has a people that have been endowed. So
December 10th to February 3rd.
Yeah, you're looking at, what are we looking at?
That's less than 2 months.
Less than 2 months. Huge effort, and then the temple eventually out of our hands. But then Brigham Young will now say on February 4th, you know, temple is closed, right? And he will say, flee Babylon. In other words, get out of the United States and go west. They're about to go west, and he's willing to take them west now because of the numbers of people that had received their temple endowment.
It's interesting he saw that as, you know, necessary before he wanted
that to
happen.
Yeah, he saw it as totally necessary before they went west. In other words, he wants them endowed with power, you know, by authority, you know, from heaven before he even wants to even consider going west. Notice as he takes off, he leaves an apostle behind to finish the temple. And I think it's interesting who he leaves behind. He leaves Orson Hyde. And he says, finish that temple. In other words, finish floor one, finish floor two, finish the top, get the angel on. And you'd say, how long does he take him? So recall Brigham Young's leaving in February of 1846. There's a skeletal crew that are staying behind. And the temple then is finally completely dedicated, not just one floor that had been dedicated so they could have the endowment, but the whole temple is dedicated on April 30th of 1846. Now, with that, Hyde takes off, as do the others. And then you look at, since our focus is temple, what happens to the temple? Well, we're gone. And the big question in Nauvoo is, will we come back? In other words, look what we've left. We've left the largest building, you know, as you came up river from St. Louis. So you can't find another large building like that on the river. And the question is, if that building continues to stand, will the Latter-day Saints come back? So on October 9th, 1848, an arsonist went inside and set fire to the building. And the inside of the structure was wood. So you've got the limestone on the outside, but you've got this dark wood then on the inside, and the walls are dramatically weakened. So by October 9th, 48, you've got this fire, And then you look and you say about a year and a half or so later, you have this great wind. And was it tornado? I don't know, but a great wind now rips through the town of Nauvoo. And with walls weakened of that temple, three of the walls come tumbling down. And, you know, it's just like, well, all that work. And then they're down. And finally, you know, there was a great concern by the city council there in Nauvoo that remained not Latter-day Saint, that, you know, we just can't have that. You know, kids climbing, it's dangerous. So by 1865, they took down the last remaining walls. Now, in Nauvoo, you can look all around, go down alleyways, look at foundations, and you're going to find so much of the town is built on the rubble of the Nauvoo Temple, that you see these little blocks that came down all over town. And you know, it's a whole bunch easier to take already quarried rocks than to go down to the quarry again makes and get sense. Other ones. So with that, you'd say time passes. And as time passes, we now come to the 1930s. So it's my attempt at World Civ, right? Well, we jump from the 1800s to the 1930s. And we look first at this man, Bryant S. Hinckley. Bryant S. Hinckley was the father of President Gordon B. Hinckley. And he was a school teacher by trade. He chose the best profession, right? And he was a principal, and he's now a mission president in Chicago. And he becomes very curious about Nauvoo, and that's part of his mission area. And he goes to Nauvoo, and he sees that main street of town called Mulholland. Well, it extended one more block. So there's the bank there and, you know, various stores. But on the block where the temple had stood, there was a shoe factory, a match factory, a couple of apartment houses, and an Icarian kind of dining hall. And he then goes to Carthage and he tries to figure out, where did the Nauvoo Temple stand? And he looks up, you know, I mean, he's a school teacher, he's a researcher, and he comes back and he figures out it stood on that crowded block where you got the match factory and the shoe factory, and, you know, it stood right there. And he concluded he wanted to buy it, but as a school teacher, he doesn't have that kind of money. But luckily for him, he has a really well-to-do friend named Wilford Wood. And he says to Wilford Wood, I want you to come out and meet me in Nauvoo, and I want you to buy that block. And so Wilford Wood, Woods Cross out in Utah is named for this man. He was a furrier by trade. And by this point, he'd already started buying some church properties and giving them to the church, such as the old New K. Whitney store in Kirtland. And so Wilford Wood comes out and he meets with a banker named Antone at the local bank on the corner, and he says, hey, I want to buy that block. And the banker says, it's not for sale, but I hold the mortgages. And Wilford Wood, a real entrepreneurial man, was able to work it out with the banker, acquired these mortgages, and for you know it, he now owns the block. And so he waits until Bryant S. Hinckley is through with his mission assignment, and Bryant S. Hinckley and Wilford Wood go to see Heber J. Grant. And they say to Heber J. Grant,
who was serving as
the president of the church. So they waited a while, and they go to see President Grant there in Salt Lake, and they say to him, hey, we've got the property for the Nauvoo Temple. Let's rebuild it. And President Grant thanks them. He actually takes the property, and he takes them over and shows them the Salt Lake Temple. And he goes, we don't build temples that size anymore. In other words, we don't build temples that easily fit on a four-acre block. You know, look at the Salt Lake Temple. We build massive temples, but nevertheless, he kept the property. Well, all right, years pass. And as the years pass, eventually they had what they called the Nauvoo Temple site. I actually served out there when the site looked like this at one point. And we were programmed in our kind of prayer meetings early in the morning that if anybody asked, well, are you ever going to rebuild the Nauvoo Temple? We'd talk, and especially I was good at this. We'd talk about, you know, how large the Los Angeles Temple was and the Washington, D.C. Temple. And, you know, we just don't build temples that size. But invariably, I would then attend a fast and testimony meeting of the locals in Nauvoo. And someone would say, well, a general authority came here. I had him give me a blessing, and he told me I'd live to see the Nauvoo Temple rebuilt. And so on the one hand, I'm saying no way, and yet I'm developing really fun friends that are saying, you know, I think I'm going to live to see this one rebuilt. Well, all right. We now move forward. I'm sitting at home. It's conference. It's April 1999. I'd served a mission out there in Nauvoo. I'm wearing sweats. It's general conference. I'm no dummy. I know my name's not being read off. And so President Hinckley is giving the last address of the conference. And he says he has an announcement to make. And then he starts coughing. And I'm saying to myself, somebody there should get him some water. I mean, if there's anybody's announcement, I want to hear it's this man. And finally, he pulls it together and he goes, we plan to rebuild the Nauvoo Temple. And oh, big tears, Clayton. I could not believe, wow, it's really true. All those friends I've been talking to in Nauvoo, it's really going to happen. Well, the impact was amazing. For President Hinckley, when asked, do you want the temple to have a weather vane? And he said, no. He goes, I want it to have an angel Moroni. And he said, I want it to be like the bookend to the Salt Lake Temple. So where the Salt Lake Temple, the angel Moroni faces east, he said, I want the angel Moroni on the Nauvoo Temple to face west.
This is President Hinckley?
This is President Hinckley. So he would call then the two temples the bookends. It's one is Nauvoo. They're going to flee from Nauvoo. They're going to journey all the way to Salt Lake. They're going to build a bigger temple, and they now then face each other. President Hinckley, in addition, he wanted the temple to be magnificent. I've never seen the likes of it in Nauvoo. You get a sleepy town of about 1,000 people, and you get, here comes Leighton Construction and Jacobson Construction, and they're building multi-million dollar edifice, and, you know, everything is just done to perfection. It's just magnificent. Well, as they built, when they finished, President Hinckley wanted to make a donation to the temple. And I like this picture. This picture is an artist's rendition of the only photograph we have of the Nauvoo Temple. And you see the outhouse is pretty prominent here. But President Hinckley said when he grew up in the home of Bryant S. Hinckley, that Bryant S. Hinckley had commissioned an artist in Nauvoo to paint this. And he said, as a child, this picture hung right over his mantle. And he said, as a married man, it still hung over his mantle. And finally, now as an older man, a prophet, he said, I want this picture to hang right by the recommend desk. So as you go in the Nauvoo Temple, you see the heritage picture of the Hinckleys is right there. Now we come to the day of dedication. The big question was, when's going to be the day of dedication? Many people speculating thought, oh, April 6th, for sure the day the church was organized after all the cornerstones went in. Others thought priesthood. Some thought April 3rd, you know, Elijah, Moses, Elias. But notice the day of the dedication. It's June 27th, 2002. And you'd say, June 27th, what is the 27th? It's the martyrdom of Joseph Smith. Now, I've had many great experiences in my life, but one of the just all-time favorites was to be at that dedication on June 27th, 2002. You hear the men of the tabernacle choir singing praise to the man. You know, praise to the man. It communes with Jehovah. Millions shall know Brother Joseph again. I'm so grateful that you and I are one of those millions today. But to hear President Hinckley stand up and dedicate that temple, I think what was so stunning to me was before he dedicated the temple, he wanted to tell the world who were in stake centers, you know, all over the world, listening to the dedication. He wanted to tell them about a man named Thomas Ford, who was governor at the time of the death of Joseph Smith. And, I'm sitting there and I'm going, he's talking about Governor Ford, and, you know, not many people want to read the history of Illinois. And, you know, in the history of Illinois by Governor Ford, he talks about he has three great fears. One fear is that people will keep the name of Joseph Smith alive. And thank you, Clayton, for being such a great missionary and soon to have two daughters out as missionaries. I mean, it's just amazing. And then another great fear is that people would be talking about years later, nowhere places like, you know, Palmyra, a small town, Kirtland's a suburb, right? Nauvoo, you know, trying to keep 1,000 population, but that these towns would be as familiar to people as towns such as Bethlehem and, you know, Jerusalem and Gethsemane. And you think about, you know, my kids know Nauvoo as much as they know those other cities, right? But then he said his biggest fear was that there would come along a great speaker who would link his name to Pontius Pilate. Well, when did that happen? June 27, 2002, dedication of the Nauvoo Temple. There's President Hinckley, the whole world listening, and he's talking about Thomas Ford, who didn't pull the trigger to kill Joseph, but it almost appeared he did from, you know, his involvement as we get closer to the martyrdom.
Yeah.
But I guess in conclusion, one of the great privileges of my life has been to serve in Nauvoo, to have a house in Nauvoo, to serve in the temple for a year in Nauvoo as a missionary, and to remember the past, to remember the sacrifice, and to see the joys of people now as they can once again receive their endowments, be sealed to their families forever, for all eternity, in that magnificent rebuilt Nauvoo Temple. Just phenomenal.
Yeah. Obviously, if you get a chance to go to Nauvoo, you know, you know, some people can't, you know, you might live on the other side of the world and that's okay. But
go to a temple somewhere.
Yeah, go to exactly, yeah. Exactly. It's the house of the Lord, whichever one's close to you, right? All right, well, thanks, Susan.
Thanks, Clayton, for the opportunity.
Yeah. I, again, don't have a lot else to comment except maybe to add my testimony to the temple. And I've had the opportunity to be in Nauvoo just a couple times, three times maybe. But I live pretty close. I plan to go again soon. And
oh, I hope so.
Yeah, it's a neat place. And I hope to do a video there if I can for this podcast along with some other spots.
That would be great.
I've already done one at Adamonde Yaman. And yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to close with a little rendition of maybe the second and third verses of this. Or see the grand beginning, where space did not extend. Or view the last creation, where gods and matter end. Methinks the spirit whispers, no man has found pure space, nor seen the outside curtains where nothing has a place. The works of God continue, and worlds and lives abound, improvement and progression,
I've won eternal round. There is no end to spirit, there is no end to space, there is no end to matter, there is no end to race.
That is a hymn by our friend W.W. Phelps. And sometimes I wonder how, Susan, he got this doctrine, because like in this hymn and like Adam on Diamond, there are words
so
and concepts
good.
In there that you don't find anywhere else. But
yeah,
we've got them in our hymn book, so I think it's true. All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining us again. And I've been thinking if... We're not making money from this podcast that we know of, but we don't want to ask for donations necessarily, but if there's somebody out there who would like to contribute in that way and maybe, you know, who has that ability and is in a position to, you know, contribute in that way, we would be very grateful. Is that right, Susan?
Yeah. I'd like to see you do those videos, actually.
Yes, I will try to do that. So this podcast doesn't cost a lot, but I just want to put it out there. If you can get a hold of us, there's going to be a website. I don't know the URL yet, but just putting it out there. And if you can't, we just thank you for being here. Hope you're benefiting from this like I am, I know. And Susan, again, we thank you constantly for your sharing your testimony and your expertise of these things.
Hey, thanks. It's joy for me.
All right, well, that's about it. Susan, any other last words?
No, go to the temple.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you later.